Hey, I'm Mike.
Hey, I'm Ethan.
I watched the first half of The Spy Who Loved Me.
I watched the second half of The Spy Who Loved Me.
And this is the other half.
Watch till you can't.
The Spy Who Loved Me. That's not how the song goes.
The Spy Who Loved Me. I don't know how it goes either.
What are you talking about? I just turned it on to be like, I want to make sure I'm listening to the right one. Because they play it at the end of my half. But it's not, the lyrics aren't actually, like the music's not called Spy Who Loved Me. It's called Nobody Does It Better.
No, it isn't. It's like some other song, right? Nobody Does It Better.
Which apparently was in the Bridget Jones Diary. Or Bridget Jones, The Edge of Reason.
It was a Bridget Jones Diary?
It was in there. The same song.
I've never seen that movie. Maybe we should watch that for Watch Till You Can't. There's like four of them.
Yeah, like four of them. That one might be, I mean, I don't know if that'd be worse or better than what we're currently doing. But.
Yeah, we'll see. But no, I didn't. I did recognize that they never said The Spy Who Loved Me, which is like makes sense because it is kind of like a, I don't know how you write that into a song. I mean, I guess you could probably do that. If you write Goldfinger into a song, then I'm sure you could do. And that, Goldeneye into a song.
That is a.
You can write something about The Spy Who Loved Me.
Yeah, that's a great point.
But that's not the first thing I see. And I don't know if I've noticed this before in the intros with, oh my gosh, what's the name of this this Bond again?
Roger Moore.
I don't know if I've noticed this with Roger Moore's intros or his, I guess, outfits in general. This motherfucker really likes wearing those, like, flayed-out bell-bottom dress pants.
Oh, that's
and,
of the
like,
time.
They look very... Huh?
That's of the time, dude. Like, flare-bot, like, this is the 70s.
I know that's of the time, but, like, I feel like with someone, like, with... For one, if you're a spy, maybe you shouldn't be wearing, like, extra material against your feet when you're, you know... Running around, getting chased, jumping out of planes and stuff.
I mean, maybe, but I always...
Two.
Go ahead.
I feel like James Bond's fashion needs to remain timeless. Like, that's the whole... That's my thought process. Is like, I guess, you know, like, if you want to fit in with everyone, then that makes sense. But I don't know. Something's very strange about Singh, 007, walking across with, like, you know, a little, like, peephole following him. And then you just see all this fucking, like, fabric near his pants, like, his shoes just, like, flopping around.
Yeah.
Like, it looks very undignified to me.
The thing is, like, men's fashion changes. It's just not that. It's just.
I'm aware of that.
I don't. So, like, I feel like bell bottoms are a thing. Like, people, the you know, right now, we don't have slim cut suits anymore. Like, they're not as in. Back in the 90s, they were like huge suits, you know, is what people would wear. If you see the, I think it was...
Zoot suits.
Almost, yeah. I mean, I think it was the Lakers when they won in 2000, like seeing everyone in suits there, it was like they were massive.
Yeah.
And that was fashionable. Like, that was the time.
I understand the fashion changes. I just always am under the impression that, like, when you're a spy, one, you need to have, like, a timeless look to your outfit. And two, your outfit ultimately also needs to be, utilitous. It needs to be something that, like... is like, you know, helpful when you're out in the field getting chased. And again, I feel like just big floppy like pants. I am really focusing on these floppy pants, and I'm aware that it's a very small part of this movie.
It's interesting though.
Ultimately a film that is unreasonable. Like there's a lot of unreasonable stuff that happens in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
There's a man with giant metal teeth that bends and bites
That's fashion back then, you know. Everyone had the grills.
That's
the super grills, you know?
But there's something about seeing 007 walking across the screen with big floppy bell-bottom dress pants that I'm like, there's something, this almost feels stranger than seeing like 007 in a fedora. Like there's just something off about this and I don't like it.
Yeah, that's fair. That's just me. I see where you're coming from. I respectfully disagree in some points saying that like, I think that the timelessness, if you're like in a suit with no flare bottoms, then you'd stand out a little bit more is my only concern.
So you're right. That's a fair point. But also, if you're in a suit in most of the situations that Bond is in, you're going to look like you're not.
Also, suit, not very practical in general anyway for doing like spy stuff, right? Like it's kind of restricting.
No, suits can be practical because they can be, they disarm while also being a good like place of like hiding things, right? Because like you have pockets in the insides of your like jacket. You can easily flip your jacket inside out so you can like have like a different look if you need to like blend in a crowd. Like you can make them utilitous. There's ways to make them a utility for you in the field. I'm just like the last thing I need when I'm running through like muddy streets of Perry or whatever, or like my fucking flayed bell bottoms getting like caught in like my
yeah,
getting caught while I'm trying to run, you know.
That's just fair.
Either way, other thing I wanted to say, this intro feels incredibly tired. Like, it really just doesn't feel like anybody really is caring anymore. Like, especially Roger Moore. He seems very low energy at this point.
Like, is he in the intro Like, he's doing something in the intro, or...
Even just him, seeing him walking across and, like, pointing, like, his point doesn't feel, like, on point. Like, it feels, like, very, like, sluggish. I don't know, man. There's something off about this whole vibe of the opening.
I'm just surprised they don't shoot, like, I'm surprised they don't just use the same one over and over again, you know? Like, if they have one good take, it's, like, the same thing each time, but...
I wonder if it's a situation because so many of them have different directors. Like, maybe the directors want to have, like, different timing or something like that. I don't know.
I would have never noticed.
It's at this point that the 007 movies start to feel a bit like Marvel movies, where they are starting to feel more like they are, like, just getting churned out, basically.
They do have a very formulaic feel to it. But isn't this one, like, after a huge break, too? Like, they took a little break, I think, from...
Oh, I didn't. I'm unaware of that. If that's the case, then that's a fair.
Yeah.
That's
well,
a fair point.
Okay.
Like, maybe I'm just picking up on something that doesn't exist.
No,
maybe you know what? Maybe I'm the one that's starting to like lose energy. Uh-oh.
Oh no. Maybe that could be true. I mean,
maybe I'm bringing something to this.
They did take a little break. I mean, the break is what? I think it's like from 1974 is when Golden Gun was made, and this is 1977. So like three year break or so. Which is long.
That is kind of a long break for what they were doing.
Yeah, so that was a big jump in time. I mean, they're getting close to the 80s at this point.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and this one's directed by, wow, I'm looking at the directors. This is done by the same guy who did You Only Live Twice, Sean Connery, which actually makes a lot of sense now that I think about it.
Really?
Really does, considering what happens in the last half.
I'm curious to see what that means.
Yeah. But also huge box office like success. Huge.
Made a shit gazillion dollars, this one.
It was one of the higher ones like so far. Maybe not it's like the fourth highest of the ones we've watched so far, which is pretty good, I think.
I will say that there are definitely some set pieces in this movie that are pretty impressive.
It looks good for the most part.
It looks pretty cool. And I do think this is definitely when they are starting to really lose interest in trying to make this feel like it, like espionage does not enter into the conversation here. This is not old James Bond or even middling James Bond, where he was trying to solve a mystery or trying to appear incredibly like cool and debonair. At this point, the movie is really starting to like lose interest in ever having these people feel like human beings.
Yeah. Especially the part where you said feel like human beings, were like, I feel like he doesn't really have much of a character anymore. Like, he just kind of feels like a guy who just
100%
experiences things but doesn't have any like real emotions, except I like hot women, I like not dying, I like making quips every time someone dies or I get an advantage over someone. Like, it feels very like a character that's very easy to be parodied in maybe someone by Mike Myers. I don't know.
there's one moment where I think we see like a hint of like old James Bond, and I'm going to mention it to you when it comes up. But after that, I feel like we're watching these movies in very rapid succession, and we're bringing something to these movies that maybe does not exist. But I have this feeling that like Roger Moore was allowed this like one moment to really like feel like a person again, like have James Bond feel like a human being, and then immediately lose all his humanity immediately afterwards. I'm going to get into that in a little bit, my half of the movie. But movie opens up in a submarine. We have a nuclear submarine, and it's all shaken and it's full of sirens, and they look out of a periscope. And then the next thing we know, apparently Americans and Russia have lost their nuclear submarines.
Oops.
They're just gone. Yeah. They don't know what happened to them. And so we originally are talking. Wait, is it Americans? No, maybe it's the British.
I think it's
people.
British. Yeah, because there's another submarine that appears later, and it's the only American one. So
I'm mistaking this with another movie. And so yeah, so it's the British, and it's the Russians.
It's always those three. So first there's only three fucking big players in any of these movies. It's either Russian, American, or British, and you mix them up, you toss them around. Sometimes the French get involved. Sometimes
we'll see China.
Sometimes
Yeah, like they're always referring to Red China as like a concern. You know, they're always like, they're definitely a force of nature. Yet we never really see any of their like their agents or like the people that like work there.
No, nope, they're not included.
Yeah. And so anyway, so at first we see in Russia, we learn about a special agent. Triple agent, triple X. They don't even mention the person's gender. And then we cut to a man laying on top of a woman. And now I'm aware that like in these movies, you know, the movie's literally called The Spy Who Loved Me. I'm like, obviously triple X, the agent is going to be like the woman. Like that's just, I know where this is. I immediately already know where this is going. But I see like a man like on top of the woman. And I'm like, did they like read? Cast 007 again? This is clearly not Roger Moore, and like he's sort of this like cool, charming British guy that's like laying on top of her. And at first, yeah, I'm like, is this supposed to be James Bond? Like, this is very strange. But no, it's just some other guy. And then we learn that Bond, who is going to be looking into the disappearance of the British nuclear submarine, is on a mission in Austria. And M wants him to pull out. And it's, of course, perfect timing that M says that, because as we cut to James Bond in Austria, he's literally pulling out of a lady.
Okay, I was going to ask, are they really going to just do that? And yeah, they did. They did exactly what we thought.
They are really leaning into these sorts of things now. Like, it's really absurd at this point, and it only gets worse. He gets a little message readout on his watch. Like, it's one of those, like, it's hard to, it's like, it is not on, like, the actual face of the watch. It, like, spits out a little, like, what are they called? Where you, like, put in letters, and then it's like a sting. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay, whatever, it's fine. So he gets a little message readout on the watch.
Oh, like a crypto thing, like a thing that has, like, maybe like kind of like a Pip Boy. I don't know.
Sort of. Okay. Yeah, it's fine. Whatever. It's ultimately very small, like in meaning, but it's a cute little thing that he gets a little readout on the watch. And then he's like, all right, I got to get out of here. So he immediately gets on his skiing clothes and he just leaves this lady in the afterglow of their lovemaking.
Of course.
But you know, that lady whom he was with was actually a villain. She was actually a villainous person, and she immediately double crosses him and sells him out to a bunch of people on the Austrian mountain who are going to go after him as he's skiing down the mountain. And we know it's Roger Moore skiing down the mountain because we have these awful rear projection close-up shots of Roger Moore.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It's just the worst.
I mean,
it's truly terrible.
The George Lazenby had the exact same kind of like rear projection shots of him skiing, and they're fucking awful.
I remember you mentioning that in that movie and just going like, well, it couldn't be that bad, right? And then I see it in this, I'm just like, oh man, this is, because it's like, because I was thinking about it, like I was watching, I'm like, is there a way to do this like so it doesn't look like shit? And I'm just like, I don't think so, because you want James Bond to look like he's skiing fast, you know, but like you don't want like a camera crew like on a like a snowmobile next to, you know, the actor. Like I'm just like, I'm thinking like, is there a better way of getting this kind of shot? And I'm like, I guess not. No. Like I guess this is the best way to like really sell to the audience that the person that you're seeing doing all these amazing stunts on the skis is the actor in a studio with a rear screen projector.
Absolutely.
So anyway, that happens. It's at this point too that this is really where I'm starting to get whiplash in these movies, where they whip from like really fucking stupid to really fucking cool. So let me explain. So he's on the skis and he's immediately chased by these three henchmen behind him who were told where 007 was by the woman that he was with her. So these three henchmen come out. And he's getting chased and he tries to like, you know, juke him. And he's taking really difficult little like trails down the mountain or whatever, trying to get rid of them, trying to evade them. And eventually he really can't. And so then he pulls out, because he's on skis, he pulls out the ski pole in his hand and he presses a little button and the pole turns into a gun.
Whoa.
And he just like flips around on his skis and just shoots him with the ski
that's
pole.
Pretty sick.
And like kills a couple of them. And I'm just like, whoa, you fucking, like, this is stupid.
But also cool.
This is a... No, it's incredibly stupid.
Oh, okay.
It's really fucking dumb. Just like imagine.
I thought this was the cool part you're talking about.
No. This is stupid. And it's at this point where I'm like, this is a new low. I literally wrote in my notes, this is a new low for these movies. This is, we have a man on a rear screen projection with a pole that turns into a gun where he turns around and shoots at one of the henchmen. This is stupid. And at this point, I'm like, the movie's lost me. And then he's reaching the end of this cliff as the other two henchmen are coming by. And he presses the little button and he jumps off the mountain. And this is one shot. This is one take. This is a stunt person who skis off the side of a mountain. And he just keeps falling and falling and falling. And then all of a sudden, a giant parachute with the British flag attached to it on the back just comes out of nowhere, out of his back. And then the music fucking comes in. It's fucking incredible. And it's like all in one shot. And I'm like, okay, this is cool. This is pretty awesome.
That's crazy. I think what's interesting though is that like we were mentioning earlier how this kind of feels like the formulaic Marvel series. But
yeah,
something that's different is that like you're not watching half done special effects anymore. You know, you're not watching like MODOK look like shit on the big screen. You're watching a real stuntman go off of an actual cool stunt off like a huge cliff and get in a parachute and fly off. Like that's impressive. Like that's cool. Even if you're like this movie's like plot is sucks. Whatever, it's incomprehensible. I don't really care about James Bond anymore. It's like, well, that's cool. You still get some like neat stuff going for it. You still get some like cool spectacles. When I think when you see a bunch of CGI stuff just happen, it's just like, oh, okay. It's hard to make that feel impactful or like impressive because it's just like, well, it's just a bunch of people on computers making pretty images. You know, it's like
if I will say as like a devil's advocate here. I agree with you that there are moments in this movie that like are visually very impressive with like real stunt people putting themselves in actual danger for our entertainment. However, there literally was, as I mentioned just 5 minutes ago, Roger Moore on a rear screen projection and it looked like absolute shit.
That's true.
So there still does exist moments in these movies that take you out of them.
Totally,
but
totally.
I agree with you whereas like, back in the day, I think nobody was under the falsehood that those moments I think looked good. I think they only existed so that like you could convince, for some reason, the 12-year-old boys who were watching these movies with their dads, trying to convince them that 007 is the one that's doing all of these really cool things. That they're only really there to convince dummies in the audience. But you balance out those awful looking moments with genuinely cool, incredible looking moments, practical moments. Whereas in Marvel movies, they just don't even bother doing the other one. They just stick with the awful looking CG moments.
That's basically what I'm saying. Yeah. Is that like there's at least some impressive parts in this where it's like that was an impressive stunt, and not just like some guys driving.
That
on
was
a
genuinely
screen.
Impressive stunt.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And it was unbroken take. So like this motherfucker had to do this once. He was on skis. I don't know where those skis went. Like, it just seemed dangerous. So now we get the intro. I said, the song is pretty okay. It's a little weird. The intro's cool. We've got one interesting thing here is one, like, visually, like, the motif we've got is women, like, silhouettes of women spinning and dancing on, like, guns. Uh-huh. So, like, you know, you'll have somebody, like, pulling a gun out, like, with a long barrel. And then you'll see this woman's silhouette just, like, spinning around on the barrel of the gun and stuff. So it's pretty cool, but then also the interesting thing here, and I might be wrong, correct me if I'm mistaken here, we're getting a lot of the actor Roger Moore in the intro.
Yeah.
Like I feel like previously it was mostly just women and maybe like a silhouette of 007. Here we're getting Roger Moore like a lot. Like we are seriously seeing him featured in the intro, which I don't feel like we usually see in a Bond intro. Am I mistaken?
No, I think you're right. I think definitely in the Roger Moore era. I think maybe in the last movie they might have also been in it a little bit more. But I do think they've definitely increased the amount of times he's in it. But he's always interacting with like naked women, though, it seems like.
Oh yeah, no. He's like here he's like bouncing on a trampoline and it looks really goofy. But yeah, it's like I feel like previously we wouldn't actually see 007 featured all that much. I'm not saying he was never there, but I just don't feel like he was like this prominently featured. I feel like now is where we're starting to go like, okay, this is a Roger Moore Bond movie. We need to include Roger Moore in the opening, you know, along with the women. And I feel like maybe this is something that is going to be a thread, like in the later movies, we're going to start seeing a bit more Roger Moore or the Bond that is supposed to be there included. Okay. So next we've got Bond. We've learned. No. Okay. So, and I'm sure this is going to be revealed in your half. It's at this moment that the audience is given information that nobody in the movie is aware of, which is that James Bond killed Triple X's boyfriend during the skiing scene earlier. Yeah.
Okay.
So nobody knows nobody knows this. We are putting this together as an audience because we have information that the other party doesn't
have. How do you know
that?
So, like,
she knows that her boyfriend died, and we know that he died in Austria on a mountaintop. And yeah, so we know that information, but they don't know who did it. We just know that it was some kind of British intelligence mission. Mm. We know where Bond was. We know that there are people that died. So we are aware of that. Nobody else is aware of that yet. We also learn the British government realizes that Russians can track their submarines. Okay. And then Q, everyone's like, how do they do that? And then Q's like, oh, this is super easy. Q at this point is like turning into such a little cartoon man. I kind of like
yeah,
him.
Yeah, he literally just pops up and is like, here's some weird stuff I got going on. Also, here's how technology works. That doesn't really make sense, but I'm just going to say this is how it works.
Oh my God, yes. You are 100% right. Like, I feel like his spot in these movies has become, one, legitimize all of the absurd things that need to be legitimized. Like, oh yeah, no, this is super easy. And then the other thing, which is really starting to get fucking stupid, and I mean, and there's an example of this later in this movie, I believe, is we go to like his lab or wherever he's testing his like weaponry, and the weaponry is just getting absurd at this point. Like, it's getting really fucking dumb. Like, there's like a laser gun later in my half of the movie.
All right,
it's not reasonable.
It takes
man.
A while for lasers to really come in. I was kind of waiting for when lasers started coming in because I don't think we've had lasers.
They're
since...
here.
Okay. All right.
They're here and they're not going away.
Okay.
So they learn that evidence was found in Cairo of where those, because like essentially they're trying to figure out like how did people know where the submarines were. How are they able to track them? Where, who got this information? Where can you get it? And so they said the information can be found in Cairo. So Bond is going to look into that. But also Agent Triple X is also going to Cairo to look into the same issue.
Okay.
Before I continue, is Triple X known by any other name to you? Or can I continue to refer to her as Triple X?
She's only known as Anya to me. And when I learned that her name was Triple X, I had the biggest eye roll I've ever heard in my life. Because the context is everything, but you'll know.
Context, okay, so Anya would be better for you then. You want me to refer to her as Anya?
I believe her last name is Anya Asimov.
Something long, like
Emma Safoff or something.
Something, yeah. Something long. And so I'll refer to her as Anya.
Anya.
So after all this happens, we are introduced to the villain, but I don't know his name yet. So I just refer to him as Evil Kelsey Grammer, because that's kind of what he looks like.
He does look like Evil Kelsey Grammer. Mr. Stromberg is his name.
Stromberg. So he has, in my opinion, one of the coolest looking layers I've ever fucking
seen. Is it the water one this, where it's got like those tanks everywhere?
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks sick.
Yeah. And it's like a cool looking, like a spider looking, like underwater sea lab type thing. Shit looks fucking
look
cool. So he's under the water in his big fucking like sea lab, and he brings in these two scientists, and they're the ones. He's like, thank you so much for coming up with the technology to track those submarines. I really appreciate it. So now we just know who it is. We know who the villain is. And I just wrote down, he is clearly evil. And he's at this like long table. He's on one end of the table. And then at the other end of the table is this like lady who's eating with him. Uh-huh. And he reveals, he's like, but you see, you came up with this technology. But now, apparently, the tracking system that you created, you know, it's being used to track submarines, and that information is getting leaked. And he's like, there's not many people who would know this tracking information and be able to leak it. He's implying that these two scientists are the ones behind it. And these two scientists, they look like a couple of fucking nerds. They absolutely look like they would be selling these kind of information. And so he's like, oh, my dear lady, the one at the end of the table, could you please leave us alone as we discuss some of the more grueling details?
Oh, yeah.
The more unseemly details. So she's like, oh, of course. So she like goes into like a little elevator to leave the dining hall. And then as she's in the elevator, he presses a button and the floor of the elevator opens up and she falls down, goes through like a tube and just falls into a giant fucking shark pit.
Wait, why did she die?
Because he says she's the one that's been selling him out. It wasn't the two scientists. It was her.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. So I guess it was her. And so she just gets eaten by a fucking shark. And like, this was before it's been revealed that this guy's under the water. So now knowing he has like a shark tank inside of a giant underwater facility.
Yeah.
So it's like.
Yeah, that's weird.
Imagining building this facility. Yeah, imagine building this facility around like the shark tank. I don't even know how you would do
this. I actually need to have you're underwater and you can probably see like real sharks, but you're telling me you want to actually keep some sharks captive just for fun? Is that the reason?
This is what I mean by like these villains are getting so fucking absurd. Like, you know, like I know this is a tired question to ask, but like, how are they contracting people to do this? Yeah. How are they approving anything?
This is definitely like, the movie where I started thinking about like, what, you know, movies have definitely parodied this where it's like how the henchmen get stuff. I mean, right. That's like, what is it? Venture Brothers does that whole thing, right?
Yes, Venture Brothers does this all the time.
So, like, that made me be like, I could see why people thought about, like, what is the healthcare plan with these henchmen, you know? Like, what is, how are these guys getting through life? Who contracts for this? Who is, like, I want to keep this like on the DL like, and build this huge giant spider thing in the water.
It's like the Clerks, like, Star Wars question as well, where it's like, how at fault are the people that are choosing to work at these facilities?
Yeah.
Like, are the benefits good? Like, you know?
Gotta be something.
Anyway, it doesn't really matter. It's just something that, like, really starts to pop into your mind as you watch these movies. It's such quick succession. You're like, oh, man, remember, like, Dr. No? He was just, like, a guy who, like, owned an island.
Well, they also all worked with Spectre, too.
Just never went there.
So, like,
huh?
Everything was working with Spectre, so it made it a little more believable when it's like, okay, this is just like an evil bunch of people that all are contracted with this one mission in mind. So it made me be like, right. Everyone is like in a collective co-op, you know, and they're all like working together try to take over the world or get rich or whatever the thing is. But like, these are just like henchmen now who like, I'm just working for one guy is what it seems to be.
Yeah, this is just a guy. Like, this is just a very rich guy who's like convinced all these people to like leave their families and come work on this insane facility that he built in the middle of the ocean. He knows it was this lady. She dies, is eaten by a shark. And then he thanks the scientists. He's like, thank you guys so much. You guys can leave. And the scientists are hesitating getting into the same elevator that lady got into.
Fair.
Which feels like a choice made by the actors.
How do they know? How do they know she was dropped in?
Oh, yes. They know, and this is when it's starting to get revealed how insane evil Kelsey Grammer is he's got all these buttons and controls in his, like, little C-lab.
Classic.
He presses a button, and one of the paintings that's hanging in the dining room that they're in lowers to reveal a giant television so that the scientists can see where that woman is going. Ooh. So they see her leave the room, get into that elevator, scream, and then using that TV behind the painting, fall into a shark pit and get eaten. So see all this, basically. I mean, it could be a falsehood. Like, you know, like if I was that scientist, I'd definitely be a little suspicious. But
sure.
Either way. So their nerves are getting in the elevator. And then the bad guy's lair, I wrote down, is just like a crazy looking spider submarine. We're now introduced to the two villains, that the main villains in the movie. Obviously, we have like the big bad, but we've also got his henchmen, these two henchmen. Mm-hmm. Got Sandor, who I think dies in my half of the movie.
Yeah, I don't know Sandor.
And we've got Jaws.
Jaws, baby. Jaws.
Now, Ethan, can you please describe Jaws?
Jaws is a very, very tall man who kind of has like he kind of is Frankenstein-like. He's very stilted and kind of moves kind of slow, like super slow because he's so massive. And
he doesn't really talk.
He has big metal. It's not even like a grill. It's like just metal. I'm trying to even think about how to describe just this metal
teeth.
That's been like
their teeth. They're metal.
They're teeth, but they're math. They're not just like normal teeth. They're huge. They're like way bigger than
they're
normal.
They're like
teeth.
Giant chompers.
Yeah, they're like a rat. Like, you know those cartoon bear traps. It's like a bear trap in his mouth.
Yeah, it's like a bear trap teeth in his mouth. I have the feeling like we don't learn a lot about Jaws. The only thing we know about Jaws is he is evil and a murderer.
And his name's Jaws.
And he's like unstoppable. And he's got giant jaws. I was under the impression that he's sort of like a he's like a Wolverine style thing where his like they removed his like jaw and they replaced it with like these giant metal jaws. Like he's like a product of like insane science gone wrong sort of situation. I love Jaws. I think Jaws is great. I looked this actor up, by the way. He was in a Twilight Zone episode. I believe he was one of the main aliens in To Serve Man. One of those like really tall.
Oh, really?
He's so tall. This dude had been around. He's like massive. He's like over 7 foot tall. Apparently terrified of heights. So whenever you saw Jaws anywhere that was like off the ground somewhere, it was a stunt double that they had to replace. Yeah. But I love this guy. He really brings a lot of character to Jaws.
A guy who says literally nothing.
There's something about him, man. It's like his face, his physique. The other minor thing I wanted to say, apparently he was also originally cast as Chewbacca, and he had to make the choice between playing Chewbacca or Jaws. Ooh. And he picked Jaws because it paid better and he didn't have to wear a giant suit over his face. Mm. Yeah. And honestly, I think it was a smart choice.
Yeah. I don't know, that's tough. Both kind of became iconic in some ways. Like, I knew about Jaws besides never seeing a movie, you know?
Yeah, I guess, but I'm more just like, Chewbacca's Chewbacca. Jaws is that motherfucker.
That's true. You see his face a lot more.
Yeah. So, he's like, Sandor, Jaws, I want you guys to find the microfilm full of the tracking information that was leaked. I need you to get on this case right now. And they're just like, yeah, boss, let's do this. And then we see the two scientists that built the whole thing. Uh-huh. They get in a little helicopter and they fly away and they're just like shaking each other's hands, like, we did it, we got out of there, let's go back to our families. And then we cut back to evil Kelsey Grammer, and he presses a button and the helicopter explodes.
It's not even like a missile, it's like been marked to blow up the whole time.
Yeah, incredible. Like, he knew it, they were gonna have to, there's no missile, it's like immediate, the timing, the way that they use the timing is perfect. It's like the minute he presses the button, it just fucking blows up. And then he's on the phone, he's just like, tell their family that they were buried at sea and that there was an awful accident.
Oh my god,
that's pretty great. So Bond, he's riding a little camel in the desert and he meets up with some guy named Hossian, who he knew from Cambridge. Now, I don't like this guy.
Okay.
I don't think you ever meet this dude. He's a dude who's just literally in the middle of the desert. He's like a creep. Dude has a harem full of women. He went to, I guess, Cambridge with James Bond. Then he went to, like, I think he's from like Egyptian descent. Then he went back to Egypt and he just started a harem in the middle of the desert, just covered in women.
Okay.
And Bond is like, hey, I want some information. The guy's like, are you sure you don't want any vodka martinis? And he's like, no, I want information. He says, okay, so the guy that you need to meet up with, his name is Max Kalba, but in order to meet up with him, you need to get information about where to meet up with him through this other guy named Aziz Fakesh. And then he's like, okay, cool, so I'll meet Aziz and then I'll go meet Max. Like, that's how this system is gonna work. And he goes, yes, but you see, it's getting dark out. Wouldn't you rather have sex with this random woman that can't speak English? And he, like, James Bond turns around and sees this woman just holding a rose near him. And he's like, well, when in Egypt, why not go deep in the treasures or whatever? Like that. I'm just like, I don't like any of this. I don't like any of this shit. This deep is not what treasures. I want. It is gross. It is incredibly gross. It's just,
she's going to Rose.
She doesn't speak English, Ethan. There's no way that she can say yes or no. This is absolutely a situation where this dude who runs a harem was like, when my friend comes in, I want you to hold a rose and hold it to him and then just say yes to whatever the hell he says to do, basically. Like, it is incredibly creepy. And, like, there's even a moment where, like, even Bond seems to get the creeps from this fucking guy. Like, I'm getting the feeling that he's like, I need to get information on how to find this guy Max Kalba, and I have a friend who I went to college with that is in Egypt, so I'm gonna go meet that guy.
When you're with
and
old friends with someone, and you're like, oh, this person's kind of changed a lot, and they're like,
yeah, like, I don't know if I like where this guy's gone. But then he still ends up just like, he's like, whatever,
when
like,
in Egypt,
time to have sex with this random lady. I don't know, man. It's creepy. It's incredibly fucking
James
creepy.
Bond must have the craziest amount of STD checks of, like, anyone, you know? Like, do you ever think about, like, how MI6 probably has just an insane healthcare plan to check out how many STDs are on their agents and, like, make sure they're, like, keeping it clean?
I've heard that apparently the original, like, the original, like, James Bond as depicted in the books is also like covered in scars and bruises and shit because he's like gone through so much like insane warfare and like fighting and stuff, and it's like it makes sense. Like, this man has lived a very, like, just in the last couple of movies, this man's lived a very difficult life. He's, like, gotten shot at. He's, like, yeah like, STDs are definitely one of the bigger issues he's probably going to have to, like, there's no way this man is pissing piss. Like, he's pissing blood most of the time.
Oh, yeah,
probably.
Absolutely. This motherfucker is living like, off
especially
antibiotics.
Especially with his, like, diet. Oh, yeah. So he goes to meet Aziz, but there's just some lady there. And the lady's like, yeah, you're not going to be able to meet Aziz because he told me to tell you that he's going to be late. And James Bond is very suspicious of this lady, but not suspicious enough from kissing her. So he immediately starts kissing her.
Uh-huh.
And then he's like, well, where is Aziz? Like, why don't you tell me where he is or when you want to come back? Because I don't want him walking in on the two of us. And as this is all happening, she's looking behind James Bond and sees a gun getting pointed at the both of them. It's Sandor up there pointing a gun.
Uh-oh.
And yeah. And I'm like, I think this lady's working with Sandor. So I don't know why she responds in this way, but then she's just like, no, stop. And then that gives James the indication that something is wrong. So he points her towards the gun. Okay. She dies. She's dead. Well. That woman is dead. We don't know her name. We don't know who she was working with. We don't know anything about her. Like, she's just gone.
I didn't
like,
realize
that
woman
is dead to the earth.
The woman body count was going to go up, I knew, in the later Roger Moore movies from the ones we saw. I remember, right? That's the thing.
Think
that
about
changes.
This woman's day. She had been contracted to stop a man. A man came up with a probably with a gun and was like, I'm trying to murder this man. I want you to come into the room and stop him from asking any questions and going anywhere. And then she's like, okay, you're holding a gun to me. Like, let's do this. So she goes in there under, like, you know, under duress, is forced to do this to this man that she doesn't know, this random British guy. She doesn't fucking know.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know what's going on. And then all of a sudden she's just dead. And it's like, where is her family? Like, this is all I can think about with this poor woman. Like, what is her story?
You'll never know.
Who cares, right? The movie doesn't care. And so Sandor is, you know, shoots at the lady. James Bond sees Sandor, just drops the fucking lady's body on the ground. Who gives a shit? She's fucking dead now.
It's over her.
And he chases, yeah, Sandor up to the roof. There is the lamest rooftop fight you've ever seen in your fucking life.
The
like,
fighting?
It really felt like both.
The Roger Moore fighting has been fucking awful.
It is bad. And I know it's because he's old. Like, I know this, but it's bad. Like, he said
bad.
That he didn't want to use any, like, guns. Like, he was really uncomfortable around guns. So I understand him going, like, well, he should be more of an
But then maybe he should
guy.
Be good at fucking but, fighting like, then, you know?
I agree. It's awful. Like, they have to either speed it up or they have to obscure it. Or when they don't do either of that and they just shoot it wide, it looks like an old man, like, trying desperately hard to just sort
so
of
clunky.
Wrangle with a guy. It looks awful. It looks really bad. And so it's really, really bad. And then eventually at one point, Sandor is knocked off the edge of the roof and he reaches up and grabs Bond by his tie. And Bond is like, where is Aziz? Where is Aziz? And he says, pyramids. And then Bond like knocks his hand off of his tie and Sandor just falls to the ground dead.
Okay.
And so I'm like, why did Sandor even tell him where Aziz was? Like, I don't know. Like, it seems like he should have just, you know, gone to the grave with that information. But,
yeah.
You know, he needs to figure out where Aziz is for the plot to move forward.
Sure.
So that's what happened. So that night, Bond goes to the pyramids of Giza, where he finds Aziz. But also sitting next to Aziz is Triple X.
Okay.
And watching over them at the pyramids is Jaws. Now, I don't know if this is still a thing, but this looked like so fucking cool. So it's like rows and rows of chairs sitting in front of like the Sphinx and, you know, the three pyramids. And they're like looking at it. And there's like this light show that's happening to like illuminate different parts of the Sphinx and the pyramids, sets of music. They tell like a history of Egypt. And I'm like, God damn, this would be so fucking cool to see. Like, I would love that. It probably doesn't exist anymore, but I was
not.
This is like the one time that the tourism of these 007 movies has actually worked on me.
Yeah, because I do think they start getting a little more toury, as in like, here's something you can actually go do. I feel like, as opposed to being like, Bond's in an exotic location. It's like, no, you can also do this too.
This is also so transparent, right? So like, Bond goes and he meets another guy. And then that guy's like, you need to meet another guy who's going to tell you about another guy. And it's like, well, when you're writing the plot, why not just have him tell him about the guy?
Yeah.
Like, why do we need him to meet up with three guys?
Oh, man.
It's like to simplify, but no, it's fine. So Aziz is sitting amongst a giant crowd of people sitting next to Triple X, a super secret spy from Russia. But Aziz sees Jaws standing far away in the dark and immediately gets spooked and is like, I gotta run. So he just like runs away. And I'm like, dude, stay next to the super secret agent in the giant crowd of people. Like, if you run away in the dark, like, you're gonna get fucking killed. But he's the
fucking
moron.
But she's a super, she's a little lady. What could she do against big scary Jaws man?
But he's also surrounded by people. Like, I feel like you're way more protected and safe. Like, this guy isn't gonna try to make a scene in front of a bunch of people,
no,
you know?
That's true.
Also, later on, it's revealed that Triple X, or sorry, Anya, has two other, like, guys that are helping her out here, like, as like, backup. So I'm just like, you fucking moron. But it has to happen. Like, it needs to happen this way for the plot to progress. So Bond spies on Aziz as he, like, runs away from Jaws. Aziz, like, finds, like, a tomb that has a gate on it.
Okay.
And a lock. So he locks himself inside of the tomb to keep Jaws away from him. And Jaws just bites
the
lock off with his teeth, which is honestly pretty great because it just immediately shows us like how strong this fucking guy is. And he goes in and he just kills Aziz like super easily, just murders him with his teeth. That's how he kills people, by the way. Jaws bites
them. Yeah, he fucking loves biting people. It's weird. I mean, I guess it's like your weapon, but like he's so big anyway. You could probably just punch him a lot, but I don't know.
I know. He could probably just like pummel them into a pulp, but no, he'd rather bite them. And so that Bond comes across Aziz's body and he finds... it's kind of strange because like Jaws kills Aziz, but he doesn't like raid his body. He doesn't take anything off of him. So Bond just finds the information he's looking for anyway on the abandoned body of Aziz. And so it's like not that big a deal. He's just like, oh, this is where Max Kalba's going to be. Let me go find him. And then Triple X comes across Bond looking over Aziz's body and immediately thinks that Bond is the one that killed Aziz. And so these random guys show up out of nowhere and start trying to beat up James Bond while Anya watches. But then he's beating them and then he just leaves. And Anya just like lets it all happen. She's just like standing there watching. And I'm just like, is this supposed to show that like Anya's not like a fighter? Like, I don't know. It's a very strange scene.
Just want to get involved,
so
I guess.
Then we are. Yeah. So then we move to the Mujaba Club, which is where Max Kalba is going to be. This is where Bond is going to meet up with Max. And okay, so he goes to the club. It's like this.
Fear is very close to like the cantina with Max Rebo in like Star Wars. Is what
it really is.
Like.
It really, 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 really is. Yeah, I don't know how else to say it. Like, I was thinking Max Rebo the entire time as well.
Yeah.
And they're like in the desert, so it feels a bit like Tatooine of it too. Yeah. And so he goes to the Jabba Club. No, he goes to the club and he meets up with Max Rebo. But Anya's there too. And Bond knows who she is. He's like, ah, yes, Anya, you work for this and you do that, like showing off that he's done some work to figure out who get some information on her. And she's like, oh, I apologize for my henchmen, Ivan and Boris, who beat you up the other night. And honestly, the funniest thing to me is like, one, this actor is clearly not Russian.
Oh,
two,
no, she's not.
The funniest thing, her name is Anya, and she has two guys that work with her who are named Ivan and Boris. It's just like, this is the funniest shit to me to imagine, like, the guy writing, like, trying to come up with Russian names. And he's like, Ivan, Boris, Anya. That's like, I think that's the only ones I got.
I'm done. Yeah.
So, I'm done. So, he's, like, trying to show off, and they order drinks for each other. And she goes, ah, I believe you prefer vodka martini, right? Chicken not stirred. And so, that's what she orders for him. And then she starts talking about the stuff that she knows about him. She's like, I know that you did this. I know you did that. Mm-hmm. I know you were married. I know that she died. And then immediately you see in Bond's eyes, like haunted and like angry, but not wanting to show that he's hurt in this moment. And this is, to me, the last time that James Bond is a human being. He's just
the
like,
last time.
Oh, yeah,
he's gone forever now. You never see him as a human being again.
He's like, I need to erase this part of my history because... Yeah. As I can, this is being used against him, and he knows it's being used.
That's
to,
what
like,
the producer said too.
Him, and he's
they're like, "We got to turn off that."
Yeah, exactly.
Moment. People don't like it.
You got to turn off that humanity. Turn into a cartoon character.
Yeah, people
so
like that.
So he ends up going Yeah. So he ends up going to Max Rebo, and the owner, who's the owner of the club. And he's like, ah, I know that Aziz was coming to talk to you about buying something, but I am here to talk to you about buying that thing because Aziz is not going to show up. And then Anya shows up as well and is also interested in buying that exact same thing, which is a little like microfilm like thing that has the tracking information on it. Okay. We're just going to refer to it as microfilm.
Sure.
So right before the negotiation starts as to like who's going to receive the microfilm, Max gets an urgent call. And so like one of his like assistants comes up to Max and he's like, hey, Max, you got an urgent call. You need to go pick it up. Max is like, all right, I'm going to go deal with that. So he goes over to see who's calling him. He picks up the phone and he's just like, hello, hello. And then Jaws is right there dressed as like a guy that's working there, like a janitor. And he just walks into the little public phone place and bites him, kills him and leaves. And I'm just like, how did Jaws set this up? Like, Jaws doesn't talk very much. I mean, he's clearly someone you should not be trifled with. Imagine him going up to anybody and going like, I need you to tell your boss that there's an urgent call. Like, how did he set this trap up? It worked. But like, I'm just trying to imagine, like, and also how does he sneak around? This man is over 7 foot tall. Like, how does he sneak around anywhere? And nobody's going like, oh, that guy seems like a very strange character. The dude with like metal teeth.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Also, he just walks around very like loudly, like you were saying. Like, he just is a very clunky dude. Like, he's bulky and tall and massive. That's like, he's not, stealth is not like, he's got very low attributes in stealth, you know?
No, he's got no stealth. He's definitely like threatening, but like I also don't think he's also not very charming. Like, you know, if we were looking at him as like a D&D sheet, I would say that like charm, charisma, and stealth are like fucking dead in the water.
Like, absolutely
agree. -2.
Yeah.
But somehow he manages to figure it all out. And he takes the microfilm, he bites Max, kills him. And okay, I don't know really anything about Jaws at this point. I just know that if he's under a lot of pressure, he's going to like bite someone and kill them. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, you know, is he just going to leave Max's body like in this like public phone box, like in the middle of his bar, in the middle of his club? I mean, you know, somebody like might walk in and see the body. You know, is this man big enough? And I'm being very honest and serious here. Is this man big enough with the jaws and metal teeth to eat Max? For a second, I'm like, is he going to eat this man?
Maybe. I mean, he just loves biting people, and I don't know why he'd like biting people unless like eating them too, you know?
He was going to eat him, but he doesn't end up eating him. He leaves the body there to be found by 007. Mm-hmm. But I'm still like, I don't know. I wouldn't put it past him. If he had enough time and enough privacy, I think he would eat a man.
Just like my cat.
Just like it. So Bond goes, finds the body, finds that there's no microfilm on the body. And he sees Jaws running away because, you know, he's not a very sneaky guy. So him and Anya jump into the truck that Jaws is driving away in. And they talk about Jaws. He says that, you know, he knows who Jaws is. He knows he's not to be trifled with. He's like a murderer.
Okay.
And Jaws, who is driving the truck, can hear all this.
Like he's like, I don't know about that.
It's like they're in the back of the truck. So he's just sort of like in the front of the truck and he like smiles. And Jaws parks the truck around a bunch of Egyptian ruins. And he's like walking around the ruins, you know, with the microfilm in his pocket. Bond and Anya get out of the back of the truck and follow him through the ruins. Before leaving, though, Bond takes the truck keys, because for some reason, Jaws left the keys in the truck. So Bond takes the keys. Bond and Anya follow Jaws walking around the Egyptian ruins.
Okay.
Bond is being incredibly shitty to Anya, by the way. I don't know if this continues in your half of the movie, but he is always like on her ass, calling her like a bad spy and like acting like he knows how best to like spy on people.
He kind of definitely demeans her a little, and it's just like, I'm going to tell you what to do. I know better than you.
She's a very capable spy. Like, she has a lot of strengths that he doesn't have. For instance, he ends up losing Jaws. They end up losing Jaws because of Bond. Jaws, of course, knew that they were following him. So he ends up climbing to the top of the ruins and is above them, and he jumps down. Anya avoids him because Anya is, you know, a good spy and, like, observant. Bond doesn't. So Bond ends up having to fight Jaws. She's cool as a cucumber, pulls out her gun and points it at Jaws and is like, give me the microfilm. So Jaws gives her the microfilm, and then she runs off, leaving James Bond to have to deal with Jaws. James Bond, which is great. James Bond gets Jaws to swing a plank at a support beam, which causes all of these like ruins to fall on Jaws. And James Bond says something shitty. He's just like, Egyptian builders, he says, like, all like shittily. And I'm like, I don't know. I think these were pretty well built. Yeah. They basically stood the test of time until you fucked it up, Bond. So then she's trying to drive off, but of course she doesn't have the keys. But Bond has the keys. So he's like rubbing it in her face, like, I was smart enough to get the keys, you fucking woman. And so she puts the keys in the car, and just as she puts the keys in the car, Jaws shows up and starts like ripping the car apart on his side of the, or on her side of the truck. So she's like freaking out. She doesn't know what to do. She's like backing the truck up and like driving it into the wall. And then Bond, who's cool at this point, because, you know, Jaws is not on the side that Bond is on of the truck. He's just like, women drivers. And I'm like, this man is admonishing Egyptian builders and women drivers for literally just being at least normal or competent.
Yeah.
Truly, like, the
in
worst
a normal
man
situation
on
like yeah, I mean, I don't know what you'd be doing if Jaws is on your side, like, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, seriously. So she ends up actually crushing Jaws on the back of the truck and then drives off, like, ends up saving the both of them. The truck ends up breaking down in the middle of the desert. She knows what's wrong with the truck. He doesn't. She's like, the cylinder head gasket is fucked or something like that. And he's just like, oh, okay. So then they end up walking through the desert. The Lawrence of Arabia theme plays. And then they find a boat that says that they're going to take him to Cairo. Bond is inspecting the microfilm on like a tiny little camera that he has. So he knows like what's on the camera or what's on the microfilm even before anyone else does. So he knows what's on it, and he sees that it's like confusing looking, unhelpful blueprints, like not necessarily something that by itself would be helpful, basically.
Got it.
And he does this without her knowing. She's like asleep on the boat. She says it's getting cold. Like, he ends up like putting the microphone away, going over to hang out with her. And she's like, it's getting really cold. And so they have to share body warmth with each other, and they end up kissing. Yeah. Yeah. And then she pulls out a cigarette and blows smoke in his face, knocking him out. And the next morning he wakes up and the microfilm is gone.
Damn. Got him.
So he's like walking around Cairo. Huh?
She knows his weakness for sure. Like, I think that's definitely
dude. I honestly, Anya's like a pretty good character. I don't love how certain aspects of the movie treat her, but like, it is kind of great whenever like James Bond is like shitty around her, and then she ends up being incredibly competent afterwards. I'll get into some more examples of this. So he's just like walking around Cairo. At first I'm like, oh, he's like lost. Like, does he know where he's going? But apparently MI6 and M and Moneypenny have created a base amongst Egyptian ruins. So he just is like walking around some other Egyptian ruins in Cairo.
Yeah.
Goes in the deep within the ruins, and M is there with like a little like vase with a flower in it, and M is there. But also Anya and the head of Moscow are there because they're gonna have to work together to figure this out. They're gonna have to get together and work on it. So Q says that they need to investigate the microfilm because it is intentionally unhelpful. So this is where we start to see some of Q's most absurd gadgets. It's like, we have like a laser gun. It's really stupid. Microfilm does actually have clues on it. Okay. Anya correctly identifies a seal in the obscured on the microfilm as belonging to Carl Stromberg. But everyone like says like, oh, good job, James. You figured out, you saw something that was very helpful. And I'm like, Anya's the one that fucking like observed it. Give Anya her fucking flowers, guys. So they said that they're going to have to work together, but they can't talk about the work because they're secret agents. So even though they have the same job, they can't discuss, you know, their day to day, you know, it's difficult.
It's a tough life.
So they need it. Yeah. So they need to take a train. Where are they taking the train to? Wherever Stromberg is. I don't know where he is, but they end up having to take a train there. They're going to have to work together. They're on the same train car, but they have separate rooms. And Bond is like, would you like to come into my room for a little nightcap? And she's like, no, I'm good. And he's embarrassed because he had a little like champagne bottle prepared in his room and everything. So they get undressed separately and they get ready for bed separately. She's like brushing her hair. And then just as she opens up her closet, it's revealed that Jaws has been in there the entire time.
Shit. This guy. He's so stealthy.
He's very stealthy, surprisingly stealthy. So he jumps out of the closet and just starts fucking like throttling her. Oh, and she screams. And at first Bond doesn't know what it is. He's just like, something's going on there. And then he's like, oh no, something scary is going on there. So he opens up the door and he uses the champagne bottle that he had prepared for the both of them and smacks Jaws over the head with it. And then he grabs an electric lamp and shoves it in Jaws's mouth, electrocuting his like metal teeth.
I feel like I've seen that scene before. I don't know why.
Well, do you feel like you've seen like clips of Jaws? Maybe. Like, I feel like maybe that's what's going on. Yeah, because he seems like a relatively memorable. I think he was in GoldenEye or something, right?
For sure.
Yeah. So Jaws ends up getting kicked off the train, but he is still alive. This man is unstoppable. He got kicked off a moving train. Anya's looking into James's injuries, and he sees that there's like a stab wound or some kind of wound on his shoulder. And she says, what can we use for a bandage? And James says, this, and takes off her bra. And then they start fucking banging. Whoa.
Seems like a pretty bad bandage. The next morning, I don't know. I feel like it's the material's not the best for bandaging. I feel.
I think it's pretty supportive. Okay. So the next morning, Q. The next morning, Q shows Bond what car that they're going to be driving, but Bond doesn't want to hear about any of the special modifications or additions that have been made to the car. And Q's like, funny. "You always disappoint me, James." And they drive off, James and Anya drive off, and that is the end of my half of the movie.
Okay, so I see that he's walking up with this lady. I don't know who she is. They got a suite with two bedrooms, and he says, we're Mr. and Mrs. Sterling, is what he mentions. So I guess they're posing as husband and wife. And
they usually tend to do that. I feel like this isn't the first time that this has occurred in the James Bond movies.
They get off into like they get out of their hotel a little bit, and this hot lady arrives on a boat named Naomi, and she says, "Mr. Stromberg sent me to get you." And he's like, "Oh, I'm a marine biologist. Definitely not James Bond. I don't know if that's exactly what it is, but it's implied that he's a marine biologist, and this is my wife." She's like, "I'm sorry to get you on."
She's also a marine biologist.
No, she's not. She's just a regular person, apparently.
She's just a wife. Has the
job. She's just a wife. That's her job. Job is wife.
Right.
Bond says, "Oh, what a handsome craft. Such lovely lines." So I have no idea that these are actually, like, I thought this might have been like the movie where he had an actual wife.
Wife? So you think they're actually married?
Majesty Secret Service. I thought that might have been like that.
Okay.
But no, it's obviously not. But he's commenting on how sexy the boat is. But it's meant to be how hot Naomi is. And his wife seems upset by that comment. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what this weird dynamic
is. His wife
is
upset. I love
maybe
this.
Maybe she's just acting. I guess maybe she's just acting.
I think she is acting, yeah.
Yeah. So they go out.
She's a good actor and a spy.
Yeah, exactly. She boats out. They boat out into this insane building that's on stilts. It looks like a UFO I wrote, which is the one you were mentioning earlier. It's crazy base.
Oh, yeah, the cool spider one.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm going to go meet with him. Can you show my wife around, Naomi? And Naomi's like, yes, you can meet Sister Stromberg. But he prefers not to shake hands. He's like, okay. So he enters the insane room. I don't know. I don't know if this is the same lair you saw, but it has like seats that have like, that look like legs and butts, like the legs of the headrest. Like you sit
on
the butt.
Yes, they look incredibly uncomfortable.
They look incredibly uncomfortable. Very cool though. And then there's all these different fishes on the side, like tanks and everything. And he's talking to, you know, Bond. He's like, you know, why do we care about space so much? You know, space is boring. When like most of our world hasn't even been discovered. And then Bond notices that in one of the fish tanks, there's a human hand that's been severed just in there hanging out. Like he feeds in there and he's like, oh shit. And then Stromberg says, like, do you recognize this fish? It's a lionfish. And Bond says, yes, other fish are scared of it and leave it alone because it's poisonous. And Stromberg at this point is like, you are a marine biologist expert. You are an expert. You do know what you're talking about. And I'm like, Motherfucker just like, I feel like Bond just looks at, like, he'd be definitely the spy who just looks at Wikipedia. Like, he's just looking at encyclopedias back in the day and just reading things. Cause he always, like, every time Q comes up to him, or not Q, M comes up to him and is like, so what do you know about this? He's like, oh, you know, just I read the newspaper or whatever. Like, he's very well informed. So, like, he probably was just looking at fish and was like, that's a cool looking fish. And then just
well,
it
reminds
it.
Me of, remember a couple movies ago where he played a guy who could like do genealogy and he was just like, oh yes, your name comes from this thing and this is the thing. And I'm just like, is he making any of this up? Like, it feels like,
I feel like genealogy is pretty bullshit than a guy who has an underwater like tank, you know, like, but it's,
yeah,
like
that's true. So yeah. You can't really, you can't bullshit this guy. He knows a thing or two. That's fair.
Yeah. And then Bond's like, why do you keep yourself secluded? And he's like, for me, this is all my world. Anyway, check out this cool underwater city I'm building. And he's like building basically Rapture from Bioshock. Like, he's got this huge underwater city he wants to go. And he's like, we need to live here. We need to colonize the sea. Anyway, all right, I gotta go do stuff. See you, Mr. I forgot his fucking fake name. Silver.
Sterling.
Like that. Sterling. Mr. Sterling. That's always his fake name, isn't it?
I don't know.
Sterling?
I'll look it up. Maybe it is. Let's see.
I feel like he's used that one before.
I mean, it makes sense, right? Because like he's so obsessed with like a, what do you call it? You know, like a money and all that kind of stuff.
Sure, it's true. Anyway, he says, "I hope your research goes well. I have something to attend to." And so he gets on the elevator and leaves and goes meets up with Naomi and his wife, and they're talking about how like big these new tankers are that he's got like custom made. Stromberg is doing. And he's like, oh, those are really impressive. And then we cut back to Stromberg. He talks to Jaws. He's like, so that's James Bond. At this point, I didn't know if he knew about it. He seemed pretty honest. He's like, that's James Bond and some Russian agent. Let them get ashore and then kill them immediately. Little I know that like Jaws obviously would fucking know this because he's been fighting him multiple times. Like, obviously he knows they're spies at this point. I guess it's how Stromberg must know as well. But it's like, why is he explaining it to him? Like, go kill those guys. You know who they are.
So I looked it up. Apparently, in Quantum of Solace, the name on Bond's universal export card is R. Sterling. This is a reference to The Spy Who Loved Me, where Bond used Robert Sterling to speak to Stromsberg. So apparently it was only used in that movie, but then referenced in Quantum of Solace.
Wow, okay. Maybe I thought it was more relevant, but maybe not. All right, so
I've heard Smith, but anyway,
I mean, might have been other ones. So he says they get to know that all we know for sure from all that visit is that two nuclear submarines are missing. So they leave, they drive off, they land on shore, they drive off. And then a motorcycle starts following them. A motorcycle with a sidecar, empty sidecar. And they're trying to escape, like, oh shit, we're being tailed. So they're driving the car, and a semi is in front of them, and it won't move. They're in like kind of like a cliff with maybe one or two lanes, but the semi is so big, it's blocking them from getting around. And
oh no.
So the motorcycle, the person riding the motorcycle presses a button, and the passenger side pod launches off towards them in like a rocket, and they move in front of the semi, and the rocket hits the back of the cargo hold and explodes. And then for
Holy
some
shit.
Reason, because the explosion was the big old semi instead of, you know, Bond, the motorcycle guy then flies off a cliff, and all these feathers fall out of him. I don't know why they're feathers. I do not know. I'm hoping you have some context. Maybe I missed it.
Maybe he's wearing something.
Maybe. And Bond just says, all those feathers, and he still can't fly. Moho.
Maybe he only had feathers on so that he could make that joke. That's what it feels like to me. They worked backward from the joke. I don't
it's
know.
So weird. I thought he would.
I agree with you. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
They're usually slightly more clever with their jokes that are just kind of whatever. But anyway,
they're getting worse. They're getting a lot worse.
Getting worse. It's true. So another car chases them with Jaws in it. And they're on the cliff. They're chasing them, shooting guns at Bond. Bond then presses a button, and mud starts flying out of the windshield, or like the back of the car, and gets all over Jaws' car's windshield with all the other henchmen, and they fly off the edge of a cliff into a building with a little Italian man sipping wine who's out front of his little like barn. And you see his car just like sticking straight out of the barn, and the Italian man comes out and goes, Mamma mia! And then
I love Jaws,
and I'm like, oh man, all those people are definitely dead. And then Jaws just walks out of his house and dusts himself off and looks at this little Italian man and keeps going. Like, all right.
See, so this is, I feel like the thing, like, this is going to sound like I'm reaching here, but I feel like most action adventure movies nowadays miss out on stuff like this, where it's like, we need a fun, exciting chase sequence, but you need to throw in a little bit of levity every once in a while that's like genuinely funny. You know, we need a Mamma Mia.
We need an Italian man being upset that his car or his garage got collapsed in.
His world is falling apart.
Literally. But Jaws isn't. He's still hanging out. Being
no, funny. Jaws is doing great.
So then they're riding. They're still trying to escape. But then a helicopter appears and starts chasing the car and shooting at Bond and Anya. And the helicopter pulls up alongside Bond. And he sees that Naomi is piloting it. And he starts doing all these maneuvers to try to shake her off. But she's really good at piloting. So she keeps getting on them and shooting at them and trying to get them. And then Bond says, Anya, can you swim? She's like, what? And then this is the part where I'm like, these gadgets are sick now. This gadget's so sick.
Ethan is sold on these gadgets.
He flies off the cliff into the water in the car, and he presses a button, and like the wheels go in, and fins pop out, and it's in a fucking subboat. And it looks fucking cool. He has like a little periscope he looks up, and all the like the steering wheel turns into like a controls for a boat, and he's underwater, and the helicopter thinks that she drove them into the water and they're fucking done, right?
Right.
But what happens instead is the helicopter's like circling over them, and I don't know, this is the silly part, but he has a button that shoots a rocket straight up from the bottom of the car or top of the car up into the air and blows up the helicopter. I'm like, why would Q install,
why would that exist?
Here's your underwater to air missile for all those helicopters that are going to be trying to get you. Like, it's a very specific use case, but it blows up the helicopter. But it looks cool, and he's like, all
it
right,
looked,
well,
it was useful. It was useful.
Yeah, it was useful. And the whole time they're like wanted to get a look at Stromberg's base, but this is one easy way to do it, is they just are in the water now, so they go and like go to the underwater parts of his crazy base, and they peer in, and they don't really see a whole lot. They just see some bad guys looking at a world map, and then these dudes appear with these scuba outfits, and they got harpoons, and they start trying to shoot at the car, and he starts driving around the car, and he shoots torpedoes at them, and they get blown up by the torpedoes, and then more subs appear, and they're also trying to chase the car, and then at one point, there's a diver with the harpoon, and he just fucking runs him over with the sub car, and it looks pretty cool, and then Anya starts pressing buttons. She presses one that says ink, and presses an ink button, and it inks the whole place up, and the subs that are trying to chase him start to get caught in the ink. And then she also presses a button that drops mines, and the mines blow up the sub, and they're all good and they're safe, and they're trying to escape. And Bond's like, how did you know that? And she says, I stole the blueprint of this car 2 years ago. I'm like,
see, Anya's cool. I like Anya.
Yeah, and
she's a cool one.
Unlike Bond, she knows more than Bond did. Bond's like, whatever. And she's like, oh, I know how this works.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, women have to work twice as hard to be just as accepted as men are, you know?
Yeah, as accurate as hell. So then, fortunately, one of the bombs hit the car, so they have to kind of surface because they're starting to leak. So like, all right, we got to get out of here. So they arrive at a beach, and they just drive up. All these people on the beach are like, whoa, they're all scared. Some of them are interested in it. And then they just drive out. This car just drives out like Jaws. It's very Jaws reminiscent. And
like
I'm
the movie?
That's because the movie Jaws came out around this time, I believe, right?
And the guy's name is Jaws. The
guy's name is literally Jaws. Yeah, I think.
Let me see.
Like,
this movie came out in 1977.
1977. I feel like Jaws came out around.
Jaws came out in 75?
That makes sense. That's what I was guessing.
Yeah, 1975. So yeah, you're right. This is probably in reference
all references.
To that.
They're like the most popular. We're gonna coast off the most popular movie at the time. So you know, even like almost the way the car drives up almost has like Jaws like music coming out. It's kind of fun. Yeah, pretty much. So back home, back at their like I guess their not home, but you know, hotel. He sends a message to M about Liparis is what they're looking for. I don't quite know what that is. Do you know anything about Liparis? I think it might have been the thing he might have maybe what's his face was talking about. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Liparis. Is that not the
matter.
Okay.
The sexy hotel worker comes out front and delivers a message to Bond and then says like it's been 9 months since Liparis was launched, but there's no record of it being at a port anywhere in sea, which might be. Oh, you know what? I think that might be the thing that Anya, the big tanker that they were showing Anya, like her and Naomi were talking about, like this new fancy boat they're building. It's like super big. Like we need to know some information about that.
That sounds like it must be that. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, Anya's like, I'm going to smoke a cigarette. And he's, you know, Bond being the gentleman offers her a light. But then she's like, where'd you get that lighter? He's like, oh, I got it from Bear Garden. She's like, when was
Beer Garden?
When did you get Beer Garden? When was this? 3 weeks ago, he said. And then she's like, oh, my husband died there 3 weeks ago.
Oh.
And she's like, did you recognize him? And I'm like, whoa, this is fucking crazy. So I had no idea.
Yeah, this is all coming for you now. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, no, who is this man? He's like, the man I loved. He was there 3 weeks ago. Did you kill him? And he kind of looks and he's like, well, when you're on skis and someone's shooting at you, I don't really remember faces.
Damn, so, he's not even going to try to like act like, I thought he was going to lie, man. I thought he was going to straight up lie.
I feel like the evidence is too strong. Like a British spy in the same area. So he's like, yeah, I think I did kill him. And then she says, when this mission is over, I'm going to kill you.
Whoa.
And he's like, okay, I guess.
No, they're going to fall in love with each other.
No, Mike, don't. There's no way. There's no way. He killed her husband, her love forever, her lover,
yeah, the love of her
life. Eternity. Like, she's going to exact revenge, absolutely, and not fall in love with this man who's literally
definitely
only
not.
Advantage is that he charms women.
And that he's also not even that good at his job all the time. Sometimes
exactly.
He's just really lucky.
He's very lucky.
Well, wait, what is this song? Nobody Does It Better is the name of the song, right? And it, like, I mean, look at the lyrics, because I think there is reference to the fact that, you know, you don't want to be in love with this person, right? It's, where is it? How'd you learn to do the things that you do? Nobody does it better. Makes me feel sad for the rest. Nobody does it half as good as you. Baby, darling, you're the best.
Okay.
Yeah,
very
baby. Why'd you have to
very,
do it so
specific.
Good? Nobody does it quite the way you do.
No, they sure don't.
Nope.
Interesting. Okay. So what happens next? They go to a submarine. They enter a nuclear submarine, the American submarine, one of the last ones they got. And the Americans are like, the American captain sees Anya and James Bond, and he's like, oh, Anya, I didn't expect you to be a woman. They just called me Major Amazavov. And she's like, I'm a major here. Treat me as such. He's like,
ooh.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, you can use the shower in my quarters. You don't have to use it with everyone else, like all the guys in like the small-ass submarine. And
right.
She's like, I don't need special treatment. And then cut to her taking a shower there. And the captain's looking the other way. And some random guy shows up and is like, here you go, captain. Here's your stuff. And then he looks up and goes, whoa! And the captain's like, what's the matter? Never seen a major take a shower before? Because just a naked lady in the middle of a submarine. That's crazy.
That's pretty crazy, yeah.
I don't even know why she took a shower. Like, why did she need to take a shower immediately? She got here. Maybe it was a long trip. But then she's, you know.
Don't you, the first thing when you get somewhere after a long trip, you want to just, like, refresh?
Yeah, and you want to, like, leave a little crack open so the camera could see your naked body? Yeah, definitely. That's absolutely what I do.
If I'm being followed around by a camera, definitely going to do that next time.
Absolutely. Or, like, you're showering in someone else's place. It's very small. And you're like, I guess I'll leave this open so they make sure I'm in here. You know?
Yeah.
So then, we're at the kind of the sub-command stuff, and she's loading her gun, and Bond is like, which bullet is for me, the last or the first one? And she's like, I've never failed a mission. And he says, that's unfortunate, because neither have I, so we're going to have a nasty thing.
The fact that they're both
alive,
I feel like, is the best like indication that they haven't failed a mission. You
right?
know, like, if they failed the mission,
right?
They'd be dead. Yeah.
Well, maybe not. Maybe they could have escaped, and the mission could have went bad. Who knows?
That's true.
So then the sub controls get disabled, and then they're like, oh, shit, well, there was a boat. We were looking at the big boat because they were trying to spy on the elbow. I don't remember what it was called, Lapsoff or whatever. And they see it, the elbow, and it shows up, and they're like, oh, we're going to get hit by it. They're coming right for us. Oh, Lapras, that's it. And
right.
He says, but we got to move out of the way, but we can't. It's impossible. And then the boat opens the front of it, and it sucks in the submarine, and you see two other subs there. So this is the third sub that gets entered in. And this set looks super cool. And I want to say this set is massive. It's a huge inside of a boat. But it did make me remember that this feels very, very similar to You Only Live Twice, that same set with the volcano. Very, very similar.
And it's the same director, right?
Same director, yeah.
Wow. So there you go.
Exactly. And you know what? They're using fucking monorails, just like in that. Using monorails.
This is my favorite thing about these Bond movies. They're like, how do we make this guy look even more futuristic?
Always monorails. Every single time.
Monorail. Yeah.
Monorail. Every time. It's like putting a bird on it in Portland. So then you have 2 minutes. They say you have 2 minutes to open the hatch and surrender their ship. Otherwise, we'll cyanide gas you. They cut like a hole in the sub to do that or something. Mm. You're like, all right. And the captain's like, we'll comply. We'll do that. So they get out there and Bond's like, stay close to me, Anya. We'll try to hide you. And they hide her by putting a hat on her and making her blend in. And so they get all the Americans out and Bond says like, don't look up, you're on candid camera. Which I'm like, man, I haven't heard that in a long time.
What a time. This must have been new too. Yeah.
Oh, probably. Yeah.
There's so many references in this movie. There's a reference to Jaws. There's a reference to Lawrence of Arabia. There's a candid camera reference. These are really turning into like the scary movies.
No. Marvel movies have those modern things too. So I feel like it's definitely more modern Marvel.
Do they? Do they have modern movie like references?
I feel like they have little things where they're like, check on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. I don't know.
Oh yeah, my most modern thing I can think of is Facebook.
That's the last time. Yeah, I mean, you know, when Iron Man was still around, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, are you listening to this MySpace?
I'm friends with Tom over here, Tony. He's my best friend.
Everyone's Thor, friends with
that's
Tom.
That's not anyone's friend. Everyone's friends with Tom.
Yeah.
Anyway. But like anyway, while they're pulling people off the sub, some guy like pushes her a little too hard. Her fucking hair comes or her hat falls off, and she has a huge hair flip, and then starts punching people. And then of course, Stromberg's like, bring those people to me. Bring Bond and that guy over here.
Right.
And so now has them in his like little private area in the boat. And as Stromberg's like, all right, now your curiosity can satiate it. I'm going to tell you my entire evil plan because I'm the evil guy.
Fucking love this thing, man. Let me tell you everything that you need to stop me.
Exactly. All my plans here. So he's like, all right, so within minutes, I'm going to blow up Moscow and New York. They're not going to exist. And Bond's like, how much do you want? He's like, I have no interest in extortion. I don't need money. I just want to change the course of the history. There's a beautiful world beneath the sea, and I'm only accelerating the doom humans have created. So he's like, I'm going to basically launch this underwater city that is proven that I don't even know if it exists at this point. Not even feasible. He's like, I'm going to fucking launch that shit because the world's going to be uninhabitable, the surface area. And I'm like, this is such a stupid idea, but okay, buddy. One thing I will say I do appreciate about these Bond villains is they're so cartoonishly evil. They're not trying to make them like empathetic or like any sort of like real reasons. Like this would be in another movie or like a Marvel villain, for instance.
Yeah, like a Marvel
that person
villain
might have too good of a reason. It's like, oh, humans are polluting the earth, so I want to make them stop, and so I have a thing that maybe pretty much puts out corporations that are polluting evil people or polluting like the earth or something like that. That's what it would be, and be like, oh, I understand why that villain's doing that, but we can't have that. This one's like, no, I just want to nuke Moscow and New York so that I can start this weird startup
venture. Just because I want things to be different. That's all it is. He's just like, I just want things to be different. I agree with you that it's nice to have villains that are like completely illegitimate. Like they have stupid reasons for doing the things that they do, and they're just like evil and malicious. But the actors are not having enough fun with these guys. Like,
no,
that's my
not.
Biggest problem.
They're not.
You compare
they're
this to, like, Christopher Lee, who feels like he's getting off on the fact that he's walking in with a fucking, like, golden gun that cannot be detected. That's the kind of shit I want to see.
I do
see a villain
like that
who's
is more
it.
Rare in a Bond movie, though. Like, that
Christopher
Lee's an exception. There's, like, that. Maybe Goldfinger's another eccentric one who's, like, loving being a villain.
These guys are just too sad.
Yeah, everyone else is just too serious, and it's like, this is such a goofy movie. Be a little more goofy about it. I even
feel
like, what was the guy for the first Roger Moore movie? I can't remember his name. Live and Let Die. That guy was having a good time too. Like I felt like
what,
that was
the
when we were
Saturday.
Well, the guy. Well, we also had the Dr. Facilier villain, like sidekick.
Yeah,
as
that the Saturday. Yeah, that guy. He was having a grand time. I loved him.
It was a good time, even when he exploded, when he flew up in the air. Like he was having a good time.
Yeah, see, this is what I'm talking about. You got to get actors who are just, like, not going to bring any of their, like, hoity-toity, like, oh, I went to Strava or whatever the fuck. Like, let's have him like have a good fucking time on yeah. that on that screen, man. Light it
absolutely
up. Like,
agree.
This guy lives under the sea. Like, what can we do with that? It's like, oh, I'm I like octopuses, and he's just like constantly like sticking things to walls. Like, let's give him something fun to do, you know? Like, or like, oh, I like puffer fish, and he's
don't
just
worry,
like always wearing.
Soon.
Like,
wait, if we get to octopussy, maybe that'll be there.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
They're saving it for that. Like, we can't blow the octopus stuff yet. You know, we gotta
you can't blow the octopus stuff yet. That's right.
Yep. Sticking with that phrasing.
You gotta save the octopussy.
Always. So he's like, put the men with the prisoner, like put James Bond with all the other prisoners, but the lady's gonna come with me to Atlantis. By the way, I don't know if we mentioned that his little like UFO thing is called Atlantis.
I didn't know what it was called. I just knew what it looked like. Yeah.
Yeah. He called it Atlantis. So he says, farewell, Mr. Bond. So this is the funniest fucking scene to me. He gets on the monorail with Anya and like a goon, and the monorail goes so fast that it opens up a little hole in the side of the boat, and it shoots out, and the top part of the monorail disconnects, and the top part becomes a boat that starts flying like a speedboat that starts going off towards Atlantis. It's so funny looking. It's amazing. I love this little like effect they have going, and they just drive off to Atlantis. So Bond's here with the shenanigans that are going on with these boats still, or these submarines. And he basically, as he's becoming a prisoner, he breaks out and everyone starts shooting at him, but he escapes and he manages to hijack one of the monorails. And he's like, just drive. And so he like, the guy drives and he says, get this guy to come over here. And he beats him up, beats up these guys in front of the prison. And then he opens up the prison, which has all the U.S., Russian, and British navies all stuck together in one room. Actually, I think it might have been the British Navy first. He breaks them out, and they all start breaking each other out. And so now you got all these guys running around. And I think the bad guys who are left remaining, there's like a captain guy who's here. I'm just going to call him Evil Captain. And he's kind of like a naval officer for Stromberg. And they seal the operations room. So very similar, actually. Very, very... very similar to Honor Majesty's Secret Service. No, not Honor Majesty's excuse me.
Live and Let Die?
Twice. Where they lock everything up in that same like base. They have like a spot where they lock everything up again so no one can get in, even though there's a whole bunch of people. And the whole bunch of people come out and they go to the armory. They get a bunch of guns and they start firing and killing everyone, trying to get into the operations section again. But they just cannot get in there at all, even with all these people working together. So what they're going to do is they're going to find the, nuclear bomb that's inside of the American, I believe it's the American. No. They find a nuclear missile in the armory that's already there that they took from one of the other submarines. They had an extra one. And, they start trying to be like, okay, Bond basically plays Operation Disarms a Nuclear Device. He's like, don't touch any of the sides. He does it perfectly. Of course. It really is like literally operation.
That game had just come out, and so they were like, we got to reference fun game.
So he then takes the little like detonator thing from the bomb, which I guess is a smaller bomb, and he goes on one of the cameras that are on like a conveyor like pulley system, and he rides one of the cameras all the way to the operations room where they can't see him because he's on top of the camera, so they don't know he's in there. And they disabled the security systems from the outside, not sure how. And then he puts on a timer for the bomb to go off right next to kind of where the whole thing is sealed up. And it's a 20-second timer. He does it, and then he tries to zip line back, but he can't. He can't, but then everyone, because the security system went off, they're like pressing a button to move the camera away. So he moves the camera away. So luckily, just before it explodes, it blows up the door. Bond is fine. Everyone rushes
Hell yeah.
in. They storm the place. But they get there, and Evil Captain is like, the submarines are already at the station. You're too late. The orders are already there. So they like try to figure out what's going on. They basically are like, let's reprogram these submarines to have different coordinates and each other's coordinates. So if you find the coordinates of each one, which they do, they program it with shooting at the coordinates of the other submarine. So they do that. They both get the message, and the guys on the subs are like, oh, new coordinates, sure, whatever you say, buddy, we'll do that. And then they shoot off their you know, nuclear missiles at each other, and they both blow each other up. And then at this point, I don't know what's going on, but for some reason, the boat they're on decides to start blowing up as well. I tried to figure out what was starting to blow up, but they all had to get out of here. So they
this
all
always
escape.
Happens. Like, they usually do try to give a reason, but at the end of the movie, they need to, like, destroy the, like, whatever.
Secondary thing, boat. Like the, yeah.
Yeah, and it's so just like, all, well, like, I don't know.
It's very Mythbusters where, like, we'll just blow it up at the end. So then...
Yeah, exactly.
They get in. They escape on the submarine, but, you know, at this point... Anya's still stuck in Atlantis, and on the submarine, the American submarine, the captain there gets orders to destroy Atlantis as soon as possible. And he's like, sorry, James, I got an order to do it. He's like, but Anya's on there. I have to save her. And he's like, well, I'll give you a half hour. And he's like, give me an hour and I'll say, and if I don't save her, just start blowing it up anyway. He's like, I'm going to get court-martialed, but okay. So then Bond gets his special little package from Q and he puts it together, and it's a jet ski, which are new at the time. He gets on a jet ski, drives all the way to Atlantis.
Thank you for establishing that they were new at the time, by the way.
Well, because they made it seem like such a big deal, and they're like, ooh, fancy. And it's like they were just kind of barely invented at that point.
Sure.
So he gets inside the base where Stromberg is, and he was going to drop a shark in the elevator, which I didn't know. They're all like scared of this elevator, but it doesn't work for some reason. And Bond then goes to that giant table with Stromberg at the end that you mentioned earlier, and he sits in front of it, and he's like, all right, Bond, I'm going to this is the end of the line for you. You went to save me, but I'm still going to take you out. And there's a fucking, I don't know if you saw this, a comedically long gun from this part where Stromberg is sitting all the way to James Bond's balls.
No, I did not see this gun. This sounds incredible, though.
So he pulls the trigger and shoots it, and it misses. And then Bond says, oh, my turn. And he puts his gun right where the hole is and shoots his gun into the tube and kills Stromberg, shoots him multiple times. It's fucking weird and goofy, but really funny to me.
Okay. All right. Sure.
So then Bond's like, all right, I gotta find Anya. So he goes and finds her. By the way, Anya's been strapped to a chair earlier in the scene. We see her strapped to a chair.
Of course she has.
Yeah, yeah. And of course in sexy outfit now. Like, she's like, oh, much, because Stromberg's a creep. And
yeah, Stromberg's a creep.
Yeah, Stromberg, not the producers of this movie.
Nobody else is a creep in this. Yeah.
So then Bond is like going to find her, but then Jaws appears and Bond shoots Jaws in the teeth and he's like, ah, and then Bond just runs away. And then Jaws starts chasing him and they go into the big old tank with the sharks. Mm. And Bond is like kind of in the middle of the tank area and it's on top of this pool. And it's very industrial looking. It kind of looks like a reservoir or something.
Right.
And Jaws jumps down. The camera actually shakes when he jumps down, which is a cool little touch to show how big he is.
And that's pretty cool.
But Bond has, for
big
some reason...
Big fan of that.
It's very cool. But then for some reason, Bond has the ability to maneuver this giant magnet. This giant magnet comes down on top of Jaws, and his teeth get stuck to the magnet. And the magnet drags him over to the middle of the shark pool, and Bond says, how does that grab you? And then he presses a button and drops him into the sharks. And Bond leaves. He's like, fucking done.
And yeah, he's like, obviously he's dead. Obviously the man is dead.
No, we cut to Jaws, and he's fucking wrestling the shark, and he bites the shark and kills the shark. It's incredible. It's so good. It's,
Jaws rocks, man.
He's the best.
By the way, do you think this is a reference to the movie Jaws, where it's just like, you think you're a big movie Jaws? We are the real Jaws. We're going to kill that shark.
Yeah, we're going to kill the shark. Maybe. Could be it.
I don't know.
It's goofy, but I love it.
Very.
He rescues Anya. They say we got to get out of here. At this point, the Navy's like, well, time's up. Sorry, Bond. They start shooting at the Atlantis, trying to blow it up. So they have to try to escape Atlantis before it sinks. It's a very impressive set. Lots of water going everywhere. Everyone's wet. They're trying to escape. Of course, Major's in a sexy outfit, getting all wet and stuff.
Of course.
They get into this swankiest little underwater escape pod, and it's like, I cannot describe how swanky and goofy this pod is. It's literally a bed. It's like a bed with like, it's like someone just put a bunch of cushions everywhere. There's a bed on the side. It's like a conversation pit. There was no like pit part.
It's just a harem pit. Like, it's just a
harem
pit.
It's a
harem
pit. Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's like fucking champagne and shit everywhere. It's like a cool date night submarine, like escape pod. So they get in there.
Stromberg
to be
made
amazing.
This.
He did. I don't know what he was expecting. Yeah. Even Kelsey Grammer was thinking about this the whole time. He's like, just my fuck pod. I'm going to people in danger and we're going to go in here and escape. So They escape. They arrive at the top. The whole place blows up. They're fine. And he's like, well, I'm going to break open this nice wine. And he gets ready and he sees her. And she's pulling out a gun about to shoot him.
Uh-oh. Because she said she was going to kill him when the mission was over.
Our mission's complete. And he just goes, oh, and then bang. But it's him. He pops the cork of the wine. Or the,
sure.
I guess champagne. And he says, well, in my country, the condemned man usually gets one final request. And she's like,
anal. All right.
Not far off. And
I knew it. I fucking knew it.
And she's like, okay. She's like, okay. And he says, let's get out of these wet things. And then they take off their clothes and they do it. And she's like,
so goddamn stupid.
I know. It's like, this is like, okay, this is really it. This is how they resolve this crazy conflict of like, you killed my husband. And he's just like, what if we just fucked instead? Like, what if we just did that as our final request? And she's like, okay, that works for me. Yeah, it's like, come on. Yeah. This is so stupid.
This is stupider than Jaws fighting and killing a shark with his teeth.
Absolutely. Yeah. James, he says, what is our superior saying? He says, they'll never find out. And then, of course, the next scene, they're getting picked up on the boat.
Yeah.
And they're seeing, they this big boat takes their little capsule. And, you know, the M is there. The Russian superior officer's there. And they peek in and they see them naked, having sex in this fucking sex boat. Which is a sex boat. What do you expect? Like, it's literally it's a sex, just a
what do you
boat.
Look, what are you going to do in a sex boat?
Also,
what do you do?
I hear, this is the first time I hear this. I hear, James. And then the Russian guy goes, triple X. And at this point, I fucking put my head in my hands. And I was like, her fucking agent number is triple X.
Triple X, yeah.
And they say, what are you doing? And then James looks at them in his little pod and says, just keeping the British end up, sir. And then he pushes a button and this fancy fucking frilly white curtains come down and cover up what they're doing. And that's the end. Except you see Jaws escape. He escapes out of out of Atlanta somehow. And he leaves. And that's the end of the movie.
I love it. I love Jaws. What'd you think, Ethan?
It's a three.
I'd give it a three. I'd give it a three.
Like, if Jaws had not existed in this would be a two for me. Because I just love this weird guy who just can't be killed. He's a cartoon character. And like the movies in a weird way are getting less cartoony. And we were mentioning earlier how we like the cartoon. At least I like the cartoon aspect of how these are getting more goofy. And for somehow making it more palatable, all the kind of problematic elements of it.
Sure.
And the fact that Jaws is in here makes this way more cartoony because the rest of the movie itself is kind of getting a little too self-serious in some ways. In some ways, moments. I don't really like. Yeah. In moments, even though there are still a lot of goofy gadgets and things like that. Like, I don't think the rest of the levity is kind of caught up. I feel like it's getting more serious in the plot and more like the villains are more serious, you know? And less fun. And so, and then it ends up being that. And I don't know. It's okay. It's okay. It's fine.
It's fine. It's fine. I'd probably give it like a, I don't know, three feels right. I didn't really hate it, I will say, because I liked Jaws and I really liked Anya. I liked her character. Don't like what they did with her at the end, but that's fine. But I don't know. Like, I can't say I hated it. I guess I'd probably give it a three. But this is where it's starting to really lose track of realism. Before we go, though,
too.
And it only gets more formulaic as it goes. I'm sure. But before we go, I do have three things I wanted to mention about this movie really quick, if you would allow me to.
Go for it.
One, the actor who plays Anya, Barbara Bach, apparently was cast only 4 days before principal photography.
Whoa.
She was obviously not Russian. She had barely acted. And when she did her audition, she was only expecting a supporting role in the film. So there's that. The actor that we referred to as Kelsey Grammer, his name was Kurt Jurgens.
Kelsey Grammer's better.
He was a German-Austrian actor. Here's my favorite thing about him is he had a heart attack he suffered on stage. During the heart attack, he had a near-death experience where he claimed he died and he went to hell.
Whoa!
You don't often hear that from people when they go to the other side. Yeah. But all right, so this has all been very fun. A person dying, a woman being cast out of her depth. This has all been very fun and humorous. But let me tell you something that's very sad and serious. So the Wet Nelly, which is what they referred to as the car that could drive as well as like be in the water.
Yeah.
Okay. They refer to it as Wet Nelly. It was purchased in London in a London auction in October of 2013. By Elon Musk. He planned to rebuild the vehicle and attempt to make a fictional dual-purpose car to be an actual dual-purpose car, water and on land. This was in 2013, and as of 2025, it's not a reality.
Whoa, who could have seen that coming? That's so crazy. Wow.
Although looking, so I didn't know what this car looked like. I mean, I kind of saw it in my half of the movie, but like now looking at it, I will say it kind of looks a little bit like a cooler looking like Cybertruck a little bit, like the way that the windows look and the So
like,
I'm wondering if he's
a real car though.
Yeah, no, it looks like a real actual utilitous car with utility. But yeah, I would say I'd give it about a three stars. I'd give it about 3 stars. That's a solid.
Yeah,
it's a solid film. It's not a great film. It's not a bad film. There's a lot to appreciate.
Theme song's kind of whatever. I heard it. I was just like, it's fine.
Theme song's fine.
Carly Simon. Gene, I was just looking at the wiki just to see if there was any quick thing. I just see a note here that says Gene Siskel praised the ski jump stunt, but said the rest of the film is good, not great. So
I saw that, and I agree with, you know, Siskel and Ebert. They knew what they were talking about at times, and I 100% agree with Siskel. Where it's like, can't really top an actual real life stuntman jumping off of a fucking cliff and then pulling a parachute and surviving. That's some pretty cool shit. But yeah, overall, it's fine.
Well, the next movie we already are recorded for, so there's no question if we're going to continue on. But we'll see. I'm excited to see kind of next where we go, because they mentioned this one that like who cares about space, but this next one's called Moonraker, so I don't know if anyone really doesn't not care about space.
We'll see. Guys, if you want to listen to Moonraker, you can find us on any podcatching app. And while you're there, please leave a 5-star rating and review. We will read it in the show no matter what it says, even if it is a comment that you've already left before and we're starting to get a little formulaic here. And if you want to get a hold of us, you can email us at email@theotherhalfpodcast.com. Find us on Facebook or Instagram. We're on Blue Sky and we have a Discord. Check out our Discord. Drop us a line. Let us know what you think about this series, if you're enjoying it or if you're a Bond mega fan and you're like, guys, stop this.
Guys, figure it out. Yeah.
Which is fair. It's a fair response. But yeah, so check us out next week where we talk about Moonraker. What? I hear it's going to be out of this world. Oh! Good night, everybody.
3-6-5 You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Would you guys like to discuss the movies that we talked about on the podcast, recommend movies for future episodes, or maybe even watch movies with us? Check out the Discord.
You can find the Discord on the latest episodes or on the website, theotherhalfpodcast.com. We're just hanging out chatting.
And while you're there, maybe also check out the second of the Discord, which is specifically for Ethan's streams on Twitch. You get updates as to when he goes live. Just keep up to date with us, with Ethan, the podcast, and the stream.
It's also totally okay if you just want to hang out and talk about the podcast. You could hang out there and maybe we'll see you there and watch a movie or something.
Or maybe you're like, wow, these streams are so much better and you just totally ignore the podcast. That's also another option.
That could happen.
Why not?
The Discord is your oyster. Come join us.
The Discord is your oyster. Join it.